This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening. And we heard a lot of big ideas from the president in his State of the Union address. But perhaps the biggest last night, the one most Americans would be happy with, even if nobody goes back to the moon or heads off to Mars in the next 2 years, finding a way for this Democratic president to work productively with this Republican Congress.
If you share the broad vision I outlined tonight, I ask you to join me in the work at hand. If you disagree with parts of it, I hope you'll at least work with me where you do agree. And I commit to every Republican here tonight that I will not only seek out your ideas, I will seek to work with you to make this country stronger.
What big ideas do you endorse from the president to make this country stronger? What's practical to achieve in 2015? What would you like the government to tackle? We'd love to hear from you, 8778-MY-TAKE, or go to thetakeaway.org. We'll be sharing some of your suggestions all hour long. In an hour-long address last night, the president underscored a Reagan-like rosy picture of national values, of global influence, and good times for the estimated 30 million Americans who tuned in.
At this moment, with a growing economy, shrinking deficits, bustling industry, booming energy production, we have risen from recession freer to write our own future than any other nation on earth. It's now up to us to choose who we want to be over the next 15 years and for decades to come. Will we accept an economy where only a few of us do spectacularly well? Or will we commit ourselves to an economy that generates rising incomes and chances for everyone who makes the effort?
But we begin with Todd Zwillig, Takeaway Washington correspondent. Todd, welcome.
Hi, John.
So it was a pretty hopeful-seeming tone last night. The president seemed very, very comfortable from the podium. What did you observe in the chamber there?
Well, you observed a president who's not running again, which he pointed out to the country and to Republicans. He doesn't have any elections left to run. That's obvious. But also it seemed to free him up a bit, a president who was much more comfortable delivering the speech and seemed a lot more comfortable dealing with a Congress that's largely recalcitrant. But, John, you know, there are lots of policies. There was a bit of a laundry list in the speech, a little bit less so than in previous years, perhaps. But I think the subtext underneath the speech was maybe a lot more important. You know, the president has labored his whole presidency under a deep economic recession, banking and housing collapses and wars. And really, it's, you know, it's eaten up a lot of the capital and the energy of his presidency, I think. And now it seems like he wants some credit. The economy has turned around. Unemployment is down. Manufacturing is up. And the president wants to have some legacy benefit to the turnaround. And I think that was a lot of the positioning of the speech and a lot of the challenging to Republicans in Congress. Look, there's also a battle cry in there. You played the part of the speech where the president wanted some conciliation. Look, there are areas where we can get along. Let's not dive into cable news and gaffes and one-upping each other. Let's be productive. But he was also defiant. He did lay out the laundry list of the things he wants that he knows Republicans either can't or won't entertain on immigration, on economic issues, a big tax increase for the very wealthy to fund some middle-class initiatives, including free community college and tax credits for people. He knows he's not going to get these things. And John, I think there was sort of a warning underneath all of this. And I heard the president saying to Republicans, maybe, but to the country, definitely, look, this next election is not going to be like 2012. It's going to be kind of sunny in America economically. You people are all going to feel a lot differently about me and my legacy in 2016 because things will be going pretty well. And Republicans, income inequality is a major issue. You've acknowledged it. Everybody in the country knows it. And if you want to have an election and fight on the value of middle class advancement after sort of a great 2 years of the last bits of the Obama presidency, that's a fight that Democrats would like to have. So help me get to work now or fight on our turf in 2016.
If we're to separate this into three big themes, and you've outlined the three of them there, the goodie bag of proposals, and it'd be great if you could tick off some of those for just a moment to remind us, the plea for let's work together, which we also alluded to, and this sense that, hey, good times are back, which would you say is the most important?
Certainly not the goodie bag. Maybe the goodie bag is important for 2016 because it gives the next Democratic nominee a place to push off of. Republicans are not going to pass a lot of those things in the goodie bag. We mentioned tax increases on the very wealthy, a tax on big a tax, I should say, not an attack. Although if you're a Republican, you might see it as an attack on the biggest banks making over $50 billion. Free community college tax credits for second earners, expanded child tax credits, and all the rest. That was a big goodie bag that the president mentioned. I think that the most important part of this speech in the subtext was the president taking credit for an economy that is perceived to have turned around by many, many voters. And the polls showed that going into the speech. But also really an acknowledgement for the country in explicit terms that the economic turnaround has left behind middle class wages. This is not a last 5 years problem, John. This is a generational problem. And none of the things in the president's goodie bag list or laundry list or whatever we're calling it are going to turn that around. But what I heard was a prelude to 2016, where if the middle class feels left behind while the big banks are still doing great, and combined with the fact that Democrats are viewed a lot more favorably in voters' eyes than they would have been even in this last midterm election when Obama did get trounced by Republicans, that is going to spell a very populist, very favorable set of conditions for Democrats if Republicans don't move and come around and agree with him on a few of those on a few issues.
And, you know, the visions of the stony faces in the gallery there and the question of whether Joni Ernst, the Republican senator from Iowa, had a pleasant job in following the president last night or not so much, all part of this 2016 calculation. Todd Zwillick, thanks so much.
You got it, John.
Todd Zwillick, takeaway Washington correspondent in the gallery last night as the president delivered his State of the Union address. The Republican counter-argument to the State of the Union speech came from brand-new Iowa Republican Senator, as I said, Joni Ernst.
Americans have been hurting, but when we demanded solutions too often, Washington responded with the same stale mindset that led to failed policies like Obamacare. It's a mindset that gave us political talking points, not serious solutions.
Senator Ernst, in the Republican response, made the case that the U.S. economy is not just about numbers. It's a feeling that whatever the president says, millions of people believe we are not there yet, not out of the crisis.
We see our neighbors agonize over stagnant wages and lost jobs. We see the hurt caused by canceled health care plans and higher monthly insurance bills. We see too many moms and dads put their own dreams on hold while growing more fearful about the kind of future they'll be able to leave to their children.
Joining us now is Dr. Tim Kaine, a research fellow at the Hoover Institution. Dr. Kaine, welcome.
Hi, John.
What did you make of the arguments of Senator Ernst there? How did she do? And do you think Americans will buy this counter-argument that we're still not there yet when the president gave such a happy days are here again kind of message in his State of the Union address?
Yeah, the follow-up speech is always difficult. I thought she did fine, but it won't be remembered. But I think what will be remembered is the president trying to put a happy face on an economy that the data say really are weak. Now, he threw out a bunch of claims. For example, one was, I think he said at every step, we were told that our projects would explode deficits, but deficits are two-thirds lower. Well, that depends on the fact that he set the peak. I mean, he set the record deficit early in his presidency of $1.5 trillion. So sure, it's down to half a trillion dollars, but that's not really a record to be proud of. So I think some of his shaded statements, he said we're outside of the shade of this crisis, all of his statements, you really have to question, where was the starting line? I think just second example, he compared job growth in America to job growth in other countries since 2010. Well, that's kind of a funny date to pick. That's after the heat of, you know, the depths of our recession had passed, because it was just hitting those other advanced economies. So, you know, the fact is wages are still going down, and everybody in America knows that.
Do you quibble with the unemployment rate, 5.8%? He certainly took much credit for that.
Yeah, it's not that I quibble with it. I mean, this is something when you go to Salon.com or Slate and you know, left of center outposts, everybody knows that the labor force is contracting. I mean, this is not an expansionary market. And the fact that we had fast job growth for one quarter really isn't something you want to hang your hat on. You need to look at years and years of job growth rates and GDP growth rates of 5% per year. We just haven't seen that.
Ronald Reagan was great during his two terms in playing the numbers against the impressionistic feeling of America's getting better. It's mourning in the country. Do you think Obama played this sort of tonal strategy against the U6 unemployment rate actually at 11% or labor force participation, which is a dreadful number? Is Obama making a impressionistic case that defeats some of these numbers that are absolutely correct that you're talking about here?
Well, I think he's doing the best he can to point that the economy is strong, but he's got a tough act to follow. I mean, you're right. Reagan had a great recovery, and Bill Clinton had an amazing recovery. I mean, these were, you know, the numbers just make what we're going through now appear what it is, pretty mild and stagnant. The one thing the president, this president, Obama, can take, I don't know, credit for, but that he can say proudly is we haven't had another recession. We've had actually a pretty long, although it's been mild expansion, and we're one of the longest expansions. Actually, it doesn't feel like it, but it's been one of the longest expansions in U.S. history.
Well, certainly an argument that will be reiterated and argued about in the 2016 campaign as that gets underway a year from now. Dr. Tim Kaine, thanks so much.
My pleasure.
Dr. Tim Kaine is a research fellow at the Hoover Institution. We want your reaction to President Obama's State of the Union address in this hour. We're asking if you believe America can still do big things in this environment. From Providence, Rhode Island, every great civilization falls sooner or later.
I think that America can definitely still do big things. I am, you are, we all are. But rather than focusing on doing really big things individually, we should focus on the little things that we can do ourselves in our daily lives, small changes in the ways that we shop, that we drive, we eat, the way we talk to our kids. These little things are what's going to add up and make a better future for everybody.
A little State of the Union impression from one of you. Call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE. Be a part of the conversation. Find us at facebook.com/thetakeaway.